The Any Day is a great way not only to store food, but to reheat and cook in the microwave. The sleek frosted glass, especially that suave matte black IO collection that we at Majordomo designed, also makes it a great serving bowl as well. You know what that means, fewer dishes to clean, and the Any Day is also really easy to clean. Right now, you can use code DAVE to get 10% off your entire order on cookanyday.com. Also, before we get on to show, Dinner Time Live, if you haven't heard, has been renewed for a second season. 10 more episodes. Yay. We're back. Get ready for another 10-pack of Dinner Time Live episodes coming to you soon on Netflix. Could be the last 10. I mean, we said that it was only going to be 6. Careful what you wish for.
Oh, my God. I know. Careful
what you wish for. And I am so sick and tired of, this show sucks. They need a host. What are they doing?
So who is saying this shit, Dave? Nobody. I've never heard anyone say anything negative about the show.
I'm not omniscient or omnipresent, but I'm fucking close, you know?
Where there is negativity, he is there.
He is there.
He will if there's a negative review out there, he will find it like a bloodhound.
Our other series that is more well-received. I think they're both well-received.
Come on.
The full season of Chrissy and Dave Dine Out is available to stream on Hulu. Catch Chrissy Teigen, myself, and Joel Kim Booster on some of LA's best restaurants, including Providence, Young Bond Society, and Pizzeria Bianco. We have meals by Gannett, La Casita Mexicana. And no, we didn't cover every Los Angeles restaurant for you, for you folks out there. All right, let's get on to the show. Welcome to the Dave Chang Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network, presented by Majordomo Media. Thank you, Yola Tengo, as always, joined with Chris Yang. You know, is producing. It's 9:09. I'm looking at my baby monitor right now. One's asleep, and I know that if the other one isn't, that this guy will wake up. So, and Hugo, like 6 months ago, just ripped his out.
His baby monitor? Oh, like he was. He was like staging a heist and he just like took out the security cameras. No.
He's like, don't watch me. He's like, don't watch me anymore.
I love that move. I've never heard that move in my life. That's so strong. Yeah. Just blacking out the surveillance cameras. Yeah. Amazing.
He doesn't like it. So guess what? It's 9:09 on a Thursday. You know what that means, folks.
It's come
a long way
since
the pandemic days where I was recording in the garage, getting bitten by mosquitoes in the dark.
Wait, can we also
trying to wake up the motion sensors so I could get some light?
I almost forgot when we recorded during the pandemic, you were in the garage being lit by the motion sensor garage light. So every 5 minutes, you would just wave your arms in the air to get the lights going. That's back. Right. Oh my That's God.
Because right. This is, as Chris just said 5 seconds earlier, after dark.
After dark.
You know what happens after dark?
Almost nothing.
So yeah, if you're seeing this right now.
What is that?
It's an ice pack.
I thought it was an external hard drive just powering you.
It's an ice pack. Yeah, spent 4 days in Mexico.
And get to see nothing. A lot of sights, cool sights.
Never really left my bedroom. It hurt too much to walk. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to get an MRI on my injured shoulder, neck, and... fingers crossed, folks. Fingers crossed.
I think the neck and shoulder, I think the area, if I may, the area where you are hurt is the secreto. On a pig, that would be the secreto.
It's true. You know, it sucks. I've been really trying hard to eat, do this anti-inflammatory diet and work out and all these things. And maybe I'm just not meant to do it. I'm just an endorsement, and I need to be the head endorsement.
No, I mean, I know what because you only go 100 miles an hour. You, when you say like you're working out, you're doing anti-inflammatory, I know you're going 110%, right?
That's not enough. 125%. No, I listen. I think it's my body. I this week at night, I don't know why, but there'd be crazy pain at like 2 a.m. and I have not slept in some time straight on through and not being able to do anything. And last year, literally I couldn't walk. It feels not that I'm an athlete, but when you read about athletes that are tearing ACL and the next year they tell her an Achilles, like a Klay Thompson, and just the mental fortitude that you may not have to endure, that's sort of where I was at. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Hmm. You know, that's where I'm at. Just, I'm hoping that the MRI tomorrow reveals nothing. Hoping.
Why would you hope that it reveals? Wouldn't it be better if it was like a clear cut? This is a tear.
No, because then it's surgery. Surgically.
Yeah, then but it's
surgery.
Otherwise, it's a mystery. I don't think it's a pain. Tear.
Yeah. My hand is numb. My wrist is numb. My elbow okay. is on fire. Yeah, yeah.
What? It's nerve. Oh, it's a nerve thing. Oriented. It's a nerve thing. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, folks. Okay. And I was just telling Chris before we got on air, this happens to you. Do you know what I'm talking about? If it doesn't happen to everybody. It does happen to people that just moving around hurts. It does happen enough to people that say, I think a lot of people could empathize in this situation. They're working really hard to finish a project, some kind of goal, some kind of paper, some kind of team-oriented thing, whatever, some endeavor that has like, it's like moving heaven and earth in terms of their life. And they cannot be deterred. They can't miss a day. They can't do anything. And I feel like I know a lot of cooks that happen this way, especially when it's a weekend or it's a holiday or they finally take some time off. Everyone I know gets sick.
Mm-hmm. As soon as you stop moving 100 miles an hour, everything falls apart.
And after years of doing this, there's a pattern of holiday approaches. I'm expecting to do very little in a leisurely way, and I do very little because I can't move. Kind of way. And it's happened, I would say, most of the time. Anytime I've had time off, it's almost inevitably sick time or injured time. And I've been complaining to Chris about my shoulder for over 6 weeks, and it has gotten progressively worse.
But it has been remarkable. It seems like you can't move. Do you feel it? Let me ask you this. Like, really, do you feel it during the hour we are on the air? Do you feel it?
No, because it's adrenaline.
It's just adrenaline, right?
Yeah. I don't got time to bleed, dude. I mean, I have to fuck it up for an hour and have people complain that, what is this person doing? This is the worst show I've ever seen. You know?
Do it for the haters.
Yeah.
Got to give some people something to hate.
I just, it really had a debilitating nature mentally, this past week, because not being able to sleep, it's just, I don't know, just being in constant pain. And the truth is this, when you're younger, you never appreciate the health. And this is a platitude to most people. As I turn 47 this year, good God, health is wealth, man. Health is everything. And I do not take that lightly at all. And I feel like the past how many years of my life have really punished the hell out of my body. Mm-hmm. And it's come to roost. So looking forward. Oh, I think I'm going to get stem cell injection or something.
Can I ask you this?
So my sister's friend from college is like a leading person in the stem cell therapy. And I got to do this thing in Houston for Chris Shepherd.
Are you going to pop in and get some stem cells while you're there?
Yeah.
Do they literally, do they literally just inject some stem cells into your, where it hurts?
So what I've been told is they can grow it. So I got to go in earlier, somehow find a way to get to Houston so they can take some of my fat out. I was like, hopefully you can take a lot of that fat out. And then they grow.
Wait, because they need to remove like a layer so they can get the cells in there?
So like, They start growing stem cells.
Oh,
from your own body.
Okay.
And they're stem cell donors. And then I'd get an IV or something, I would imagine. And then, you know, or some injection. I don't know. But that's the thing. You know, put me on the TB12 diet. I'm at a point of now, like, you know what? If you want me to wear crystals and, mm-hmm. and, and like do all this takes. West Coast LA nonsense. Yeah, fine. I don't care. If I have to listen to the Chainsmokers all day, fine.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Even if it's placebo, you'll take it. Placebo yeah. effect, you'll take it. Man, I feel you.
Give me the sugar cube. Literally, yeah. I don't care.
I love it.
I'm back. I will do anything to stop the pain.
I love it, man. Scientology, let's go.
I did tell you, on one night, I just broke down. And I was like, fuck it, I'm going to drink. And I drank. Let me tell you what's not a good idea if you have inflammatory issues.
Drinking alcohol. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, it felt good. Once temporary it hits lips, it tastes so temporarily.
Oh, my God.
It was like 2 hours of, this ain't so bad.
Yeah, you're invincible.
The next day, I was like, why does everything hurt so much more?
Oh, my God, man.
Anyway, that's where I'm at. We're going to do a three things, a what's on the YouTube/Netflix mailbag, and a Daystradamus. All right. This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs, scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing, keeping it bullshit-free. That's why their pasture-raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit-free.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
So three things. The ice cream parlor booth from the final scene of The Sopranos just sold for $82,000 and a little over $82,000 at auction. If you could own any three collectibles from history film, I don't really want to talk about that, you know. You know what I want to talk about is that end scene at The Sopranos.
Okay. So three things has been canceled.
No, my three things is what's the best ending ever. Right, top three best endings.
Whoa.
And I tell you right off the bat, number one is Sopranos. I think it ended in a way pre-internet that I remember ending and people calling people like, what happened? Did your TV break? Was it an earthquake? You know, people couldn't believe that it could end like that. And I just thought it was the most brilliant way to end a TV series. I'd probably say Mad Men, number two. My limited knowledge of TV is, Breaking Bad. I only have two. I'm only going two.
I think the ending a TV show seems, a scripted TV show, ending a TV show seems extraordinarily hard. I think like something that somebody, you know, like TV's all about like the next episode. And I feel like putting a period on a series is so hard. I can only think of bad ones, right? Lost is famously horrible.
Never saw an episode of Lost. Game of Thrones was literally, I was the head leader, the ringleader for the petition to reshoot the last episode of Game of Thrones.
I mean, it was wild, man.
I mean,
the ending of Game of Thrones.
I hope Benioff doesn't hear this.
Oh, man.
Because I would say I'm friends with him. And I'm not a name drop. Apologies. I'm only saying this because we may want to have him as a guest on Game Time Live.
I mean, maybe it was the best ending in that way. We're talking about it.
I feel sore because like, I loved it so much, but man, that last one, it was like, all right, DB and Dave, they just want to get the fuck out of here. I don't blame them.
I know. And I'm sure for, like I said, it's hard, right? They probably looked at their board and were just like, oh my God, we have 72 things to wrap up. We got to get through this episode.
How many people do I need to speak to in one day that are nerds about Game of Thrones? You know? Oh my God.
They were never going to make anybody happy.
If you put it this way, listen, Ying, let you put it this way. All right, this is my third of the best or the ending of any series in a monumental change, landmark decision, the new number one.
Here it comes.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Game of Thrones. Number two is Sopranos. Number three, you could even move two, three, like move Mad Men. The last episode of Mad Men, the last 10 episodes of Mad Men, fucking genius of how they integrate into something that really happened. Brilliant. Now that I'm just saying this out loud, if we were the creative geniuses behind the TV show Game of Thrones, and I'm very excited to read The Three-Body Problem, which is why, you know, on Netflix, which is this huge book that we won't read, but just look on Wikipedia. Correct?
Sure, but finish the first thought. If we were the creative geniuses who created Game of Thrones,
and we had to endure the Game of Thrones nerdery every day, nonstop.
Right? Oh, this would be an amazing revenge. Just vengeance. Not for having really to revenge, deal with these
it's just
fuckers.
Like, every day. Yeah. I'm pissed off at fucking dick faces talking shit about our show. Imagine. Yeah,
can you imagine?
You didn't do it by this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not what the dragon would have done.
Daenerys Targaryen's ears weren't shaped that way.
That's not what she looks like when I close my eyes at night.
Drogon was 100 meters long.
Dude, no, fuck them.
Okay. If I was them, if we were them, I'd go, DB, you know what? It's proven that we're really good at this. We can craft something exquisite out of mumbo jumbo dragons, Dungeons and Dragons garbage and make it pretty amazing. So yeah. I don't think anyone should question our ability. And by the way, I think Benioff, 25 Hours is one of the best books and TV. It's amazing. And he's great, done amazing things. One of the best in the business. So it's unlikely that he would make a misstep on purpose, unless it was on purpose. There you go. That's why. To make a show that's not even divisive, I don't think really anybody thought it was good. Anybody that watched any of the episodes of Game of Thrones.
Universally, right? they had consensus on their final episode. Yeah. They achieved consensus. Yeah. No,
nobody thought it was good.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody. Like that. Anybody that actually watched all episodes thought that, well, they didn't have to convince themselves. I've now committed like 70 hours of my life to this. It's good. It's good. You know what I mean? Where you have to convince yourself. I don't think anybody thought it was good.
It's like spending a lot of money on a meal and you're like, well, I don't want to have wasted all that money. That was a great meal. Wonderful meal. Wonderful meal. Yeah. Yeah. I feel that.
That's,
hey, you know,
I
what
don't
was
think
good?
I could, there's not one person I think that can genuinely say, I enjoyed that last episode of Game of Thrones. And not only that, the genius of this is this. They're working on this cool new thing that's coming out, Three-Body Problem. They never have to be bothered again with Comic-Con. They never have to be bothered again with, will you make a sequel to Game of Thrones?
No one will ever talk to them about this again.
Ever. Ever. I mean, listen, if you're going to Irish goodbye, this is the way to do it.
That's a mic drop.
That's what I'm trying to say. It's the best.
It's a mic drop. You just took a shit in the middle of the floor and you walked out of the party.
So if you've been listening to this podcast, I think I just gave you the most revealing glimpse into how my brain works.
This is how you would have handled the ending of one of the biggest.
No, it's just like, I'm seeing an opening here that we can own. We can own this plot of land that no one's ever thought about.
The people who are pro Game of Thrones series finale. Yeah.
It's a slam dunk. They just skunked. They literally had to like just stop the game.
Yeah. That's insane. That's insane.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I know.
What
I mean,
this is true. Now, what if it's true?
I mean, then it's...
They're too... Here's the deal. Listen. They're too fucking smart and they're too fucking good at their job come up with that last episode unless it was on purpose.
They're too good to have fucked up.
Yeah.
Right? And if it is intentional in the way that you were positing it is, then it's the greatest art project of the 21st century. It's amazing.
And before we move on, I just want to protest to the Ringer, to the Podfather Bill Simmons. You're never coming on DTL ever again. That's for sure.
what was his offense?
These motherfucking guys did a rewatchables of Roadhouse
without you. Wow. That's just rude, man. That's just rude.
I mean, if I went to one of those liberal arts colleges that had no grades, that would have been my thesis. The art of Roadhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Man, that is insane, really.
I know.
That's not cool.
Not only that, I've watched it so many times, I've come up with a crazy thesis very similar to the last episode of Game of Thrones. I can't remember the director's name. That's an actual pseudonym. Or he was directed from afar by the Coen brothers.
Doug Liman is the third Coen. No, wait, this is the new.
That's the new one.
Roadhouse.
With Gyllenhaal.
What was the original
one? And McGregor.
The original one was Rowdy Harrington.
Yeah.
What a name.
What a name. Rowdy Harrington.
Was
somehow like given the script somehow. I'm just saying somehow, some way the Coen brothers were involved.
If you rearrange the letters of Rowdy Harrington and move each one place, it spells Coen brother.
That's how much I've watched Roadhouse, that I've become so delusional that I think it's the highest form of cinematic arts possible. And just bear with me. Let me just tell you this again. What if we found out, say, 15 years from now? Seriously. Mm-hmm. Please use your imagination here. You know, please. And the listeners, please bear with me, because if you think about this, it is like, holy fuck. What if you find out 15 years from now that Rowdy Harrington was actually an alias for the Coen brothers, right? Who would direct from afar and tell this person, actor, Rowdy Harrington, to direct it as, you know, they would actually direct it. But the script, the shots, the whole thing was directed by the Coen brothers.
Mm-hmm.
If that came out, what do you think people would say?
They would have to suddenly they would be like, Roadhouse is a masterpiece of cinema. I've always said it.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, the reason you would say that is, two cinematic geniuses, right? With all of their mastery of their powers, especially then. This is Barton Fink period, right? Right after Barton Fink, I believe. That they intentionally made a bad late 1980s or like 1990s action movie with all the explosions, all the gratuitous sex and violence, all of these things done poorly, to do it intentionally that bad or good, right? If 2024, 25 culture now was talking about this, they would, I think, have to say that it wasn't necessarily bad. It was probably the highest form of like directing.
Are you familiar with like the, I think, urban legend, but maybe a possibly apocryphal tale that Bill Murray agreed to star in the Garfield movie, which was directed by Joel Cohen, because he thought it was Joel Cohen. Like, he thought he was in a Coen brothers Garfield movie, so agreed to appear, like, be the main character of this movie. I don't know, man. Do you think if that, I want,
if that happened, you hold on, Ian, let's give,
I want something, I want to be real. I want that to be real.
Yeah.
Because I want to believe magic exists.
What would you think? Right.
What would you think? I would be so happy that things like that were possible in this world. Like, there's, in this world where everything is manufactured and predictable and just planned out, to be discovered that we've been completely hoodwinked by these two auteurs and they had directed Roadhouse. Nothing in the world would be more exciting than to find out in 15 years that the Coen brothers secretly directed Roadhouse.
All right. You know, Victoria, this is going to be the clip that you're going to use for social media. All right. Because we're going to say this. Yes, the Ringer Podcast Network, we're pissed that you omitted us specifically me, David Chang, I would say the world's leading figure on Roadhouse lore and history, to not be part of Rewatchables Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze. All right. I'm so upset that I was not able to share my theory that Rowdy Harrington, the director of Roadhouse, was actually not directing it, but close by, somehow, some way, that Joel and Ethan Coen, the Coen brothers, actually directed Roadhouse as we know it today. The original, not the new one.
Shame on you, Bill Simmons. You had the world's preeminent Roadhouse scholar sitting next door, and you couldn't be bothered to bring him on to talk about this. Shame on you, Bill.
I mean, if that did happen, everybody, just think about this. If that was the case, that in 2024, we find out, in total honesty, the Coen brothers directed Roadhouse, I think that would be more of a surprise than the people finding out the CIA was involved in JFK's assassination.
It would be a bigger bombshell, and it would be more exciting. Yeah.
I mean, it'd be like, what? You know?
It makes me depressed to think that that kind of thing
doesn't happen.
Isn't that depressing? That's not a real thing in the world.
Which is
that's
why sad. I choose to believe that it did happen. And shame on you, Rewatchables. Shame on you. Oh, let's go ask Dave to fucking be part of the chef movie. We could talk about that. That's the least one I know I ought to talk about. Fuck. I don't know how to talk about that. They're all like my friends. I can't be critical.
I know. What are you going to say? Yeah, but you could, oh my God. You've put so much study into Roadhouse.
You know, what are your thoughts on this potential revelation?
Who gives a shit what I think? I think you guys are right. I think it's actually happening. Like, I think we're going to find out, guys. Like,
but if and when it does happen, what do people look at that movie as one of the greatest cinematic achievements of all time?
I mean, no question about it. And also, have you guys clicked on Rowdy Harrington's Wikipedia? It looks like the Wikipedia of a fake person.
It doesn't make any sense.
As a Hollywood director and writer currently residing in Livingston, Montana, he is married and has no children. It's just like, he's married and has no children.
There's like five characters in The Big Lebowski that are actually in Roadhouse. Most notably, Jackie Treehorn is in both.
He also went from, I'm looking at Rowdy Harrington's filmography here. He went from being Best Boy Electric on two movies to Gaffer on four movies to directing Roadhouse. This is not possible.
This
is not possible.
My whole theory on Roadhouse really stems from this bit that, again, when I watched it 1,000 times in college, Patrick Swayze graduated with a philosophy degree from NYU.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know.
All right.
Could you do this, you know? Can you? I don't want to gaslight anybody. I don't want to undermine our democracy at all. But could you add a section to the Wikipedia on Roadhouse, like a conspiracy theory section, positing that, say, like, on the Dave Chang show, noted film critic, David Chang.
The leading Roadhouse scholar.
Can you just put something together that is based in truth? Cite this episode of the Dave Chang show and just see how long we can keep this out in the world. Let's just see how long we can keep this.
Let's start it right now.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, as
everybody listening, right? If we can start a religion called Scientology, if we can start religions that have golden tablets that never existed, if we can start all kinds of things that are totally ridiculous and crazy, we can get people to believe in this.
Yeah. I don't know what the headline is. It's not controversy section, just some sort of section to this Wikipedia that says, with citing this episode, that there's a theory,
amazing.
The Coen brothers theory. Yeah, put it under the section called like Coen brothers theory or something. And just see if we can get this to last for a week. As long as people are listening.
This is forever. We're putting this into the the cultural cortex.
We need one more citation. We have to get somebody else. We need to get like Van Lathan to suggest this too or something. We need another source that we can cite on this fact. Let's get another co-conspirator on.
I'm just again, just look at the cast of characters that are in Coen Brothers movies and show up in the greatest movie of all time. Yeah. Like Citizen Kane 2 and then Roadhouse. It's pretty simple. Sam Elliott is in both. Like there's two more. There's a lot of people on production that are on both. I'm telling you, it's there. It's a real life story. Are you believing me now?
We're 33 minutes into this podcast, and so far, Game of Thrones finale, the greatest finale of all time, Roadhouse is Roadhouse a secret Coen brother.
This is how it goes on After
God Dark. Damn, we have changed this podcast into a wild conspiracy theory podcast. I'm loving it. Low stakes conspiracy theories. Real low stakes.
Because you know why they're good? Here's the deal. Why these theories are great. If we're wrong, they were fun to think about. So there's really no downside. And we're not hurting anyone's feelings at all. We're not hurting anyone's feelings at Roadhouse. Lord forbid Rowdy Howard is upset that we don't believe him. I'm not Roddy Harris. He's gonna be like, why are they picking on me? It's like, no, we're elevating you, motherfucker. We're saying you're like one of the greatest directors of all time.
Okay? There's no way Rowdy can be offended by this comparison. There's no way.
And there's no way D.B. Weiss and David Benioff could be upset about us saying that they created a masterpiece last episode of Game of Thrones. Because if you were in their position, get me the fuck out of there. I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Yeah. So if we're wrong, there's no harm, nothing to
lose. No, nothing to lose.
But if we're right,
it's amazing. If we're right that Benioff and Weiss actually tried to torpedo their own show to get out, then it's amazing because they could have just like torpedo it softly, right? Yeah. But no, this shows to their testament of great being great writers. Let's do it to the point where it's 99.9% approval rating. The other way.
Yeah. 100%.
You have to try really hard to make sure that everybody thinks it's not good. Unless you find out that it was intentional, then everyone that thought it was not good, now I say it's great.
I think that's the most credible theory. Like for sure. Yeah. There's no other explanation.
It's crazy.
There's just no other explanation.
They're good.
I think they're both.
How do you write something that good and then it just lands like that? Like that has to be like, and it's, I bet you in the writers' room, they're like, people are going to be so pissed.
I don't have the balls. Like, if Benioff comes as a guest, you think I have the balls to tell them this?
Oh, you for sure should, dude. Just like, they have to know that the reception is
going
to
be like, you
so
guys, I cracked the code. I cracked the Da Vinci code.
I don't think so.
What a
man.
Wonderful way to,
I don't think so. I mean, like,
let's play
that one out for a second. Best case scenario, you're right. He's still not gonna be like, oh my god, I'm here. Yes, I torpedoed the biggest show in television history on a lark. Thank you. Thank you for making me unemployable ever again.
It hurts so much.
Worst case scenario, he's like, what the fuck did you say about my TV show? I tried really hard, man. I tried really hard. Fuck you, man. That's a lose-lose proposition. I'm sorry, guys. I'm trying to choose a username for Wikipedia right now so I can edit this thing.
Listen, what a wonderful way to look at the world, right? If just to take anything and to be able to use some imagination, spit on it, polish a little bit, and then you get this crazy but possibly true idea. It's amazing. That's why this is the best episode we've ever done.
That may be the least credible theory we've posited so far.
All right, let's take a break.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs, scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing, keeping it bullshit-free. That's why their pasture-raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit-free.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
What's on YouTube? What?
God damn it.
This segment's got a built-in theme song. It's really good. What's on YouTube? What's on YouTube? And what have you been watching is, I think, the theme of this segment, right? You know, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you guys have had a
little time. I've been watching Masters of Air on Apple, directed by the sexiest man in the world, Cary Fukunaga, I think. I'm a big fan of The Pacific and Band of Brothers, and I'm not necessarily loving it as much.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure they're going to have an episode of the Tuskegee Airmen because it's like in the intro, but we're like 10 episodes in. And I haven't seen a black person yet.
They tease the Tuskegee Airmen and they just don't show up. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's got to be the Tuskegee Airmen because, like, you know.
Just waiting.
Honestly, I've been not watching the show just to see the Tuskegee Airmen, who you don't know was, like, a very, very famous of Air Force squadron of African-American men. And I was like, oh, that'll be cool. How are they going to integrate this? That's what I was thinking. I was like, how are they going to make these story plots work?
Oh, they're
you
not.
Know what? They're not.
it's just for the trailer.
Oh, man. They pulled you in.
Unless it's a 20-episode series that it makes sense, but I think it's only like 11, 12. We'll see. I've been watching that.
You bend the air?
I crushed that. Watched the first season, was so unsatisfied that it left me on a cliffhanger that I immediately read everything that happened in the comic book. So now I know. So now it's complete. So if I don't get to watch the next ones, fine.
But I'll watch that. Renewed. I saw two new seasons of that coming out. I never watched that cartoon. I started watching that Octopus Murders American Conspiracy on Netflix. And then I turned it on and I was like, oh no, am I being turned into a QAnon person right now? Is that like what I'm doing right now? So I abandoned that, but I've been getting into the airbending. I'm gonna do it.
Airbending. I skipped a couple of the episodes because you know what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, you know what's going to happen. I don't know. I mean, have you been watching a lot?
No, I've been watching some of the Formula One.
Man, Max, the new Formula Max, One. Max really ruined it for me.
I've Equalizer 3 queued up. I can't believe I haven't watched that yet because it's amazing. The brother son, it's too not for me. I want to love it. I want to represent support, but I can't because it's scary, right? A little scary.
I'm with you, man. You know, I'm with you. I hate being scared. I don't understand anybody who wants to be scared.
You know, we got somebody feed Phil, new season, full swings out. Netflix Slam. I think many of the people that work on Dinner Time Live produce that. I guess I'll try to watch that. But other than that, I still watch a lot of YouTube.
Are you still into your Overland vehicles?
Overland and Outdoor Boys. Hell yeah. And also, now that Hugo, for whatever reason, is watching Mark Rober, like, nonstop. You know, so I know Mark, right? We're friends. And I told Hugo, I was like, you know you've met him, because he has watched like every, sorry, not trying to name drop, but it's crucial to this story. I was like, you know, you've hung out with Mark.
he was like, but I bet he can't put that together. Like,
no, he couldn't put that together because it was like, you know, not that long ago, like a year ago. And he goes immediately to me. He's like, well, that was before I knew who he was. So how could I know him?
I mean, that logic is pretty flawless. Yeah, flawless logic. Sure. He was nobody to me. Yeah. So therefore, I didn't meet the person that is somebody to me. I mean, that's fucking deep, like, philosophical shit, yeah, right there.
I had to walk away and be like, what the fuck did he just say?
You were like, you walked away and you're like, is that true?
I swear to God, I did.
I think he's right.
I was so confused. Yeah.
I think he's right.
He literally said that when I put him to bed. And I was like, you know? He's like,
if I didn't know who he was, how could I have met him? Whoa. That's some mind-bending shit right there.
I know. All right, let's take a break. All right, you know, what do we got here?
All right, fellas, it's time for an Ask Dave. We've been getting a lot of mail and a lot of love, Dave. A lot of love, too. Want to thank everyone for reaching out and listening. Remember, you can always send us your questions to askdave@majordomomedia.com or our Discord channel, where you can just tag @youknow with questions, and I'll be sure to read them for a chance to be featured on the show. All right, Dave. So this one's about the origin story of the Krispy Kreme donut dessert. So, hi, Dave. 2 weeks in a row, I've seen you make the pan-fried donuts with ice cream on DTL. I was hoping you could talk about how you make them and the origin of the idea on the podcast. I recently tried making the dish with some store-bought glazed donuts, and it was a sticky mess. I enjoy the creme brulee-like texture that frying them created, but hope there's a secret to not making a mess. Dinner Time Live is a great concept, and you're executing it well. Thank you, Patrick. Oh, sorry. Last part for emphasis.
Thanks, Grace. Patrick O is our safe word.
When you role play, just like, call me Patrick O. Your show's so good, Dave. You're doing a great job at work. Oh, baby, talk complimentary to me.
Oh, this hurts my shoulders so much.
Affirm me. Oh, man. The donut. The donut came from...
I'm trying to tell the story without, like, trying to censor names. So I was hunting. I was on a hunting trip at the hunting lodge. And there was a... It's not really a hunting lodge, but the person that was cooking there, I actually knew. He was one of the chefs at a 3-Michelin-star restaurant in France. And he was cooking there. And he was cooking for some distinguished gentlemen and gentle ladies. And we were chatting. I was like, oh, what are you doing here? You got married to a woman from Louisiana, blah, blah, blah. So he's here now. Anyway, sitting down, having beautiful food. And when I say beautiful, it was just like mashed potatoes. And like, but like when someone that's fucking good cooking does it, it's like, man, it's so good. Mm-hmm. It's so fucking good. Anyway. I'm expecting this grand dessert of some sort. And it comes out because of the person that's cooking it. I'm now thinking everything is going to be homemade or whatever, whatever. Super soigné. And I taste this thing. And it's the donut Krispy Kreme. And I'm like totally bewildered. Completely, utterly bewildered. Because I think to myself, in the pantheon of great bites I've ever had, this is right up there. Do I want to say it's the best? Do I want to say it's 5, 10? I don't know.
When you see it, you've told me this story before, and I've never asked you this. When you see this come out, do you recognize it instantly as a pan-fried store-bought donut, or do you think that doesn't even cross your mind?
No, because it's in like a it came out in like a silver bowl, you know?
Whoa.
Like an old school silver bowl.
Whoa.
With look like creme anglaise on the bottom and a canal of ice cream on top.
Okay. So it was like presented beautifully.
Yeah, but it still wasn't like overly done. It was actually pretty simple.
Yeah.
No bullshit, you know? Like a French dessert. That's what it looked like. Like from a bistro.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I took a bite of this thing and I literally was like, what the fuck? I couldn't understand it. Because it did, for me, the most important things. It doesn't have to be dessert. Do you have textural contrast? Right? Hard, soft. Do you have temperature contrast? Cold and hot. Which is hard to do. Do you have like sweet salty or like sweet something else, right? And in this case, it was more sweet bitter, that transition. I was like, wow, it has so many like polarizing components. And I was like, what the fuck? It's so simple. And I said to myself, I think this is one of the best bites I've ever had. I immediately run back to the kitchen and be like, dude, what you put in here? He's like, I'll tell you after dinner. I was like, oh man, I can't wait. He's like, I'll tell you after dinner. I come back and he's like, all right, here's what it is. He didn't use Krispy Kreme. He actually used Dunkin' Donuts. 2-day-old Dunkin' Donuts in the refrigerator with store-bought ice cream. Just like Breyers vanilla ice cream. And I wanted to punch him in the face. I was like,
I was going
to
say, you must have been so mad.
Fucking angry. And then I just laughed out loud. I laughed out loud because I thought to myself, if you take your sort of this is how food has to be mentality, that only a certain way of making a dessert can be delicious. If I take away these constructs that have been placed upon how I'm supposed to think about food, and I just literally just think about how it tasted, and I get all these contrasts, and it's just fucking decadent and delicious. And then it's told to me that it's made with a commercially made donut with commercially made ice cream. And then all they do is pan fry it, sometimes with a little butter, sometimes not. And when you got that contrast, because it's so hot that the sugar's in whatever in the glaze, it starts to pull. You know how difficult it is to pull sugar? Like, well, you can pull sugar quite well with these donuts from Krispy Kreme. And that's why I like the Krispy Kreme glaze, because I think it pulls sugar a little bit better than the Dunkin', and I'm more partial to Krispy Kreme because I think it's a better donut. And then you add on like to me, the most fucking insane combination. It's not high-low. It's low-low, but tastes fucking high-high. Right? It's usually high, low is a mixture of high and low ingredients. No, but when you're mixing the lowest of, not lowest of the low, but you rarely do you get something that tastes more elevated than something that's homemade. In fact, I do think it tastes better than a homemade donut and a homemade spun ice cream. Call me crazy. So
this is only occurred to me in this moment. So you've told me this story. I know this origin story, but it's only occurring to me right now. You have said, I think maybe you just said, this is a dish that could be on a 3 Michelin star menu. Like you, this would not be out of place. Do you mean, if I can remove the sort of the constructs and the preconceived notions and the stereotypes about what belongs and what doesn't belong in a restaurant, you are saying, if you were served this exact dish at a 3 Michelin star restaurant at Le Bernardin or something, it would not be out of place. This exact construction.
No, absolutely not. And in fact, let me remind you, my friend was the chef de cuisine at a destination three Michelin star restaurant from France. Okay. So I was expecting that level. So in some way, I'm the closest to that scenario as anyone could with this ridiculous conversation we're having about a donut and ice cream. But, you know, yeah, I think that if it was coming out of any of the top kitchens of the world and the proper, listen, if you bring out these donuts on a Girardon with a beautiful flame and they're doing a table side and they're, you know, taking the creme anglaise and they're, you know, making sure that it's beautiful, blah, blah, blah. And they take out the nice chilled bowl from below and they pour the creme anglaise. Then they take the donut, put it on a silver tray. And then with tongs, they design specifically for this donut because it's so sticky, but they figured out how to like put the donut directly in the middle and they pour a little more creme anglaise over the donut. And then they make a perfect canal with a beautiful silver spoon right in the center in the bain-marie and then blah, blah, blah. And they place it in front of me. I don't think anybody will think that it's not homemade.
It's an incredible thought exercise. It's an incredible thought exercise. If I sat down, if I had that and I was at a restaurant, they brought out a trolley. They pan fried the donut to order in front of me. You know, they pulled it out of under a glass cloche and they put it on this pan. They took these tongs, they put it on the plate, they poured the creme anglaise, they put a canal of ice cream on there, and I ate it. And I was just moved to tears by the beauty and deliciousness of this. And then I found out later it was a Krispy Kreme donut. Or if I was 99% of the world and I found out it was a Krispy Kreme donut, I would be incensed. I'd be so mad. And I would write a nasty Yelp review and there would be an expose and eater and whatever, whatever. But why? Right? Like, does the fact of it being a Krispy Kreme donut negate the pleasure you receive?
How many things in life are better because they're more expensive? Actually, truly, intrinsically better. Listen, there are things that I repeat in my life and think about a lot because it continues to grow and change. And sometimes it gets overly repetitive, but oftentimes, like, I'll jump to a new angle. And I think one of the reasons why I love this dish so much, besides it being really, truly delicious, and besides it being a perverse take on culture, right? It is almost an art house project. It is, to some degree, a statement of things. It can be all of those things, but most importantly, if it's not fucking delicious, it doesn't fucking work, right? In and of itself, it's a supremely delicious dish, and I don't give a fuck who the fuck you are. If you've been patisserie for like 25 fucking years, like, there are people that are going to downright hate this dish. Fine. Right? But all I'm saying why I love sports and just other parts of culture so much is I look at this not as a direct correlation, but very, very similar correlation to, well, that guy couldn't be a star baseball player. He doesn't have a girlfriend. He's short and chubby. Doesn't look like he's going to be homecoming king. You know, I found that liberating. You know, the quantitative part of sports, the analytics should be liberating because you sort of take away this bullshit. And although, weirdly, I think they've ruined the game.
I mean, they've made it impossible to watch. But that's another story entirely. Well,
that's another story. You know, it's like it was awesome because it changed sort of the pool of players that you could root for. It's awesome to look at the NBA now. To know that the best players are not from America. They're just not even remotely close right now. It's like, okay, that's pretty cool to me. And it's not like they were not good before. They probably would have been better here longer if we just opened the doors. I've always wanted that for food. And in some ways, this is me playing a practical joke, but not a practical joke because it's actually fucking delicious. But it's an interesting, like, if Jerry Saltz was here, we could talk about this dish for a few hours, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Without being masturbatory, you know?
Yeah. When the value of something, you know, like with value versus worth, right? Absolute value of this thing is it's delicious.
And we all know what the value versus worth is. The more expensive, the more worth it is.
We all know that. It's one of the certainties of life. The more you have to pay for something, the better it is. We all know that to be true.
Oh, it's and quality, quality plus.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah. All right.
So, hey, Dave and the rest of the crew. Hope you're all doing well. I'm a graduate student, Reed, someone on somewhat of a budget, looking to spend a couple of days eating in LA as a treat, anticipating a difficult year in my program. What are some places in LA that would be good to try as a single diner? Maybe places that are easier to get into by yourself that would be otherwise inaccessible. I'm also looking to have a splurge meal if it's somewhere really special. Any other general tips?
Splurge meal right now. Go to Providence. Sit at the bar. They just refurbished the bar. And honestly, it's a really good idea. I think I should do that too. It's sick. It's so sick there. That's where I'd go for a splurge meal. No question. Or the bar at Major Domo.
I was wondering if you'd actually say that.
Which
I'm so glad you did.
Weirdly is awesome as a diner for solo. We've always tried to embrace solo dining because I think it's the purest form of dining. I really do. I just think when someone can dine by themselves and do it on the regular and you see it, is one of the coolest things you can see from a person. You know, I can talk about that at a whole nother length later, but I think if you think about it, it tells you a lot about an individual. I would say the simple answer to this question is this, is almost every restaurant that you would like to go to might have a bar. And that's where you should go. And if it's a restaurant that makes you feel like you shouldn't be there or you just feel uneasy, and we've all had that feeling. Sometimes I feel that I go in a Korean restaurant. You know, it's an uneasiness. Your spidey sense tells you, then you don't have to do that there, right? But there are places where solo dining at the bar is probably like the best way to dine and the best way to meet people, the best way to, again, share food. The negative to dining solo is you can't order as much, or you can, and then, you know, you look weird, or you can use that as an opportunity to make friends. It's probably the only time. Yeah. You know, and it tells you a lot. Oh, someone's reading a book. They don't want to talk. If someone's just not even looking at their phone, but they're just, let's just say you're at Providence and I'm solo dining at the bar. I'm not looking at my phone. Maybe it's there to take some photos. And I'm not like reading a book, but I'm thinking about the food and I'm tasting every morsel and I'm like in it. I'm talking to sommelier about the best pairing. Sounds like a delightful evening, quite frankly. But
I was going to say,
if I'm on the, if I'm there too, it's like, I'm there for the same reason. That's like realizing your college roommate likes the same bands you do. You know what I mean? Like your freshman, your roommate, you're like, oh, and you can have this bond with a stranger and maybe it'll lead to a movie like Serendipity. Probably not, but maybe you can make a connection and then buy a glove at Bloomingdale's.
You know what it reminds me of? I don't forget where we were talking about this.
Because that's another movie that I'm going to downright say that I thought was terrible. Now is amazing. Because I remember everything about that movie.
It stuck
with me. I think no other movie in my life do I remember like every act and every scene.
I was just about to say, Serendipity, what in the world? Kate Beckinsale and John Cusack. The thing of the solo dining, I remember you saying this about Major Domo as a restaurant as a whole, and why you liked the location that you guys chose was it's not, you know, in some super walkable neighborhood. It's not in the thick of all of these other restaurants. It's out of the way. And so people have to be have an intention to go there. You've got to make something.
I've wanted that thing. For many of our restaurants.
Yeah. Sydney, whether it's Seobo in the back of the casino and all these things,
the worst location you could possibly have.
There's something that translates with that solo dining too, because it's like, if you're a solo diner, whether it's at a restaurant like Providence or somewhere else, and I'm not good at solo dining, I'll say that right off the bat, but if you're there solo dining,
it's not easy. It's not for everybody.
You're there with intention. You're not there because you had to be there. You're not there because somebody else picked the restaurant. You're not there for a business meeting. You're not there for a date. You're there because you want to be there and you want to eat there. Like that's something special. I think, you know, from the other side,
it's quality time for you.
How long do you think the meal takes you to? How long do you think that meal is for you personally, Ching? If you sit at the bar at Providence and go through,
you know, the funny thing is I eat slower when I'm by myself at a bar.
I don't think there's anything weird about that. I think when you're with me or anybody else, you're just trying to get the fuck out of there as fast as you can. Oh man.
Yeah, not wrong. All right. Let's do the quick dose Desodamus and then we can get out of here.
Dave, a lot of people across the world seem to be feeling the pinch of high food prices. In the past, going out to eat was something people could do on a lark, but that's quickly changing. So what are some strategies for us to continue to eat out in this kind of uncertain future and do it at a financially sustainable level? How do you see the industry changing for people who like to eat out on a budget?
I mean, the most practical answer is try to go for lunch. I mean, that's if they do offer lunch. And sometimes it might be an abbreviated menu, but like lunch is a great way to partake in a restaurant's offerings. Oftentimes, not always, it can be dramatically cheaper. You know, you might get a really good deal. Like Jean George for years, I think it's still like $35. It was like a $35 pre-fee from like, you know, 5 to 6. I think it's changed now. I think Porterhouse in Time Warner Center, which is a great steakhouse by Michael LaMonaco, there's like a 30, it's like a 5 to 7 o'clock, $35, $38 steak, shrimp cocktail, salad, dessert. So like Porterhouse may not be known by a lot of people outside of New York City. It's a great restaurant that but New Yorkers go there, you know, like Upper West Siders go there. People that live in Midtown area go there. It is like fucking jamming all the motherfucking time. That's also a great restaurant to eat solo. In addition to Momofuku Noodle Bar, that's also the Time Warner Center running plug. No, but that's an example of a restaurant that is probably not on many hot lists, whatever. But again, if you just go by those lists, you're never going to know that there are all these other, not even gems, just like local gems, quite frankly, to go check out. So lunch is the best way. And I think long-term, the effect on it is, we've talked about it a lot. I think it's not just in food, it's in culture as well, across all facets of culture. We're headed to a world where the things that normally are have a chance to thrive in the middle, right? Independent, idiosyncratic, mom and pop restaurants, anything that's trying to be different is going to get marginalized because it's too expensive to make those kinds of mistakes, right? So when you have those kinds of restaurants like not thriving, that only means more of the higher end restaurants are going to get more of those customers. So it's just like a double-edged sword there. No, a double-edged sword, actually. It's just fucking shitty.
just a sword.
Yeah. And again, it's harder than ever. It's always been hard to be successful in this business, but it's not impossible. In fact, it's pretty simple. You know, if you're going to do well, it's about exceeding in like service, technique, like all the, like you just have to deliver on everything better than anyone else, make it experiential, et cetera, et cetera. So you can do it. But like, that's a whole nother story. I think that it's just going to be cheaper and more expensive to like, yeah, I don't want to talk. I'm trying to find a way to make this positive, but I think it's going to be harder to find deals, specifically at interesting restaurants. I wish it was some other way, but the reality is, if you are excelling in your restaurant as a group, if you're crushing, if you have a year-long waiting list, and you are charging exorbitant prices for your food, or actually probably of value to their clientele, it's only going to get more expensive because the people that are dining there are price insensitive. And in fact, the more expensive you make it, the more of a cultural currency bonus it is to them, which is this weird phenomenon, right? It's like at some point, too expensive is actually somewhat okay, but prices out everybody else. And that has a whole longer conversation because you're going to see restaurants that are going to be able to pay six figures to everybody in the restaurant. And that's how you get real pay change, I think, and quality of living, like professionalism at a level that, you know, is rarely seen in restaurants. I think it's going to happen, not at mass, but in the best kinds of establishments, the best kinds of restaurants. And if you think about those, they are the very, very high end. So that's going to thrive. And if those things get more expensive, I just don't know how you have a cheaper alternative at the same place. You'll have places that are still good, maybe even from that same chef, but not going to be in that element. Because at some degree, you know, to do a 15-course tasting menu, it's going to be $300 in food. So I don't know how you make that cheap. Unless variable pricing happens. And I guess, what was the...
Was it Wendy's?
Wendy's.
Yeah. They said that their menu boards were going to be... They walked it back like within a day.
I was infuriated by them walking it back. Can I just say that?
Set it back.
No, I think food media jumped on it. It's like, oh, what the fuck? And you know what happened? Wendy's started to atone for trying this. They started selling $1 hamburgers. And I think the $1 hamburger is like the worst thing that can happen to our planet. And I think it's like bullshit to have driven... Even a place like Wendy's, I think it's bullshit to have just like
when I thank you for bringing it up because it's true. That just shows you how allergic everyone is to change.
It's pissed me off so much. It's infuriating. So,
especially in food. And you're right, the media had certainly a lot to do with it.
Just piled onto it. And what
that
do we get?
That could have been the watershed moment, right? Literally could have been. That was the moment to get faster than light speed and you fucking missed the boat.
Hey, I got to pause.
The aliens are watching. This is the moment.
They're like, $1 hamburgers. Let's get the fuck out of here. What are these guys doing to their shit, man? I got a positive note to end on here. I got one for you. I got this email just now from a couple of our producers on Dining Out. Speaking of restaurants that are incredible and need our support. Two of our producers ate at Yangban last week and they said it was just slammed, super, super, super busy. And that Kat said that all those people out in the dining room are because of the show. And since the show came out, they've had this huge wave of new customers and they are so, so, so happy. And I think we are all incredibly happy to have hopefully sent some business their way. But if you haven't eaten at new restaurants, like that's part of it. Like, don't be afraid to like spend your money on something new, I think is key to this whole thing.
Well, let me end it on a not positive note.
Oh, great.
To all you Korean people out there that are not supportive of Yangban, shame on you. Legit fucking shame on you. You know what I mean? It's like,
I do.
Your fucking relatives, your forefathers moved to this country so this shit could happen. Legitimately.
Yeah.
And I don't got time for you motherfuckers. So kudos to John and Kat and the whole team at Yangban.
Fuck you to everybody else.
And fuck you to everybody else.